Good day, everybody, and welcome to the CDH Conversations podcast. My name is Eva Babayi, and I am a candidate attorney in the Dispute Resolution Department, specializing in construction and engineering at CDH. Today, I'm joined by my director, Mr. Clive Ramsey.
Thank you, Eva, and welcome, everybody. I'm a director in the construction and engineering sector here at CDH, and I head up the sector in the firm. Last week, or the week before, you had the opportunity of listening to Zoda and Eva to discuss advanced payment guarantees. And this afternoon, in continuation of our mini-series on guarantees, I'm going to have a look at performance guarantees and what role they play in the construction contracts generally. In most construction contracts that are entered into between parties in South Africa and elsewhere in Africa and outside of Africa, the employer usually requires the contractor to provide security in order to ensure that the contractor complies with its obligations and performs in accordance with the contractual terms. So this security is usually provided in the form of a performance guarantee. So that as an introduction, what would you like to know about performance guarantees?
What is a performance guarantee then, or what does it actually entail?
Performance guarantee is a written undertaking by a third party, normally a bank or an insurance company, to pay the employer or the client in the construction contract a specified amount of money on presentation of that guarantee to that third party, under certain circumstances which a contract allows the employer to call up that guarantee.
What is then the purpose of this type of guarantee in construction contracts, or what does it actually aim to achieve?
Even all construction contracts, the contractor is required to perform its obligations in line with certain contractual provisions. Insofar as the contractor fails to comply with those contractual obligations or perform in accordance with the contractual terms, the employer wants some form of recourse to be able to recover in the event of that non-performance. And that's where the performance guarantee comes into place. If the contractor doesn't perform in accordance with the contract, the employer is entitled to call up the guarantee to cover the cost of that loss or damage that it as the employer may suffer. The norm in our industry is performance guarantees are calculated as a percentage of the contract price or the amount of the contract or contract value, depending which forms of contract you're using. And the norm in the industry is that the guarantee will be approximately 10% of the contract value. The guarantee will also provide that it continues for a specified period of time. So it'll either be to what's called an expiry date of the guarantee, or alternatively, it would be the end of the contractor taking over, contractor completion, et cetera, depending on the nature of the contract used.
Okay, from all of that information, who then are the actual parties to a performance guarantee?
It's sometimes a misconception that it's all part of the same contract. Yes, the guarantee is issued as a consequence of the contract, but the performance guarantee is issued by a third party. As I mentioned earlier, it's issued by a bank or an insurer who then provides that guarantee to the employer for a specified amount of money for a specified period of time. The guarantor, being the bank or the insurer, would then look to the contractor for collateral security and perhaps a premium in addition to that for issuing of that guarantee. So it is always remembered that it's a totally separate cause of action and agreement, which is then entered into between the third-party guarantor and the employer to provide a guarantee for a specified sum and it will endure for a specified period of time.
What obligation does a guarantor then have under the performance guarantee?
The primary obligation that the guarantor will have is to honor the terms of the guarantee. So if a guarantee is issued for a particular sum of money, at a maximum sum of money, and during the course of that contract, whatever reason, there is a failure to perform by the contractor, the employer will then call upon the guarantor to make payment in accordance with the terms of that guarantee. The obligation then on the guarantor is to make payment of the amount of the guarantee as called upon it by the employer.
Under what circumstances can a guarantor not make payment of the amount demanded?
I'll firstly deal with where the guarantor refuses or declines to honor the terms of the guarantee. And that could be in a situation where the demand comes in from the employer to make payment in accordance with the terms of the guarantee, but the guarantee may have expired. Or, for instance, the call on the guarantee is for more than the amount of the guarantee, or it doesn't comply with the terms of the guarantee. Normally, it will say there must be some form of demand placed on the contractor before the employer is entitled to call upon the guarantee. If that hasn't taken place and no documents are provided demonstrating that demand, the guarantor would be entitled to decline to honor the terms of the guarantee of payment. The second is more controversial in the law over many years has been the state of flux. It's now sort of clarified as to what is required. But in certain situations where an employer may call up a guarantee, a contractor may intervene and launch an application to stop the paying out of the guarantee. They would do that on the basis of saying that there has been some fraud perpetuated by the employer in calling up the guarantee. If that fraud can be shown, the court would issue an interdict preventing or not allowing employer to receive payment of accordance with the guarantee. So that's really the main reason that an employer will not be entitled to be paid out on the guarantee is if the contractor can show there's been fraud on the part of the employer in calling up the guarantee. So for an example, if there hasn't been a failure to perform on the part of the contractor, and yet the employer has called up the guarantee under those false pretenses on the basis to try and misrepresent to the guarantor that there has been a non-performance, then in those circumstances, the contractor may be successful in requesting the court to interdict the calling up of the guarantee. And in that particular instance, the guarantor would then not be required to pay out on the guarantee.
What would you say are some of the issues that then arise out of a performance guarantee?
I think there's two issues, and I'm going to combine them, is that when you issue a guarantee and you're the recipient as the employer of a guarantee, be very careful to have a look at, number one, who is issuing the guarantee, number two, what the terms of the guarantee are, number three, that you have a look at, in the event that you've got to call up the guarantee, what are the requirements for you to be able to call up that guarantee? You also need to have a look at whether or not the guarantee is what we call a demand guarantee or a surety guarantee. In the short time that we have on these podcasts, the complexity of that issue, we need to have a separate discussion about. Those are the main issues that you would have a look at. I also think it's important that when you have a look, is on the face of the guarantee, is the amount of the guarantee in compliance with the contractual provisions? Have a look at the expiry date of the guarantee. Is the expiry date sufficiently lengthy time in the future that you will have completed the works? If it's not, you may find that you're going to struggle to get it extended, the guarantee, again, unless you have a contractual provision that provides that in the event that the guarantee is likely to expire within a period of time, that you're entitled to ask for an extension of that guarantee and that there's a requirement for that guarantee to actually be extended. The other important issue is looking at the type of contract, whether you're on a JBCC contract, a FIDIC contract, an NEC form of contract, the provisions relating to performance guarantees or the standard guarantees that are provided by those institutions differ. So you can, in a JBCC contract, you can have a variable guarantee and you can have a fixed guarantee. Whereas normally in a FIDIC contract, it's a fixed guarantee for the duration of the project until from commencement or taking over. So it's again, be careful of what's been issued to you by the guarantor and making sure that the terms are what you anticipate. From the contractor's perspective, in giving collateral to the guarantor to issue that guarantee, make sure that the guarantee that's being issued is in terms of what you anticipated was going to be provided to the employer.
We have come to the end of our podcast, but to close off this episode, maybe would you let us know what are some of the important things that parties should look out for in performance guarantees?
Yes, I think we've partially dealt with that already, but just to reiterate is that depending on the face of the guarantee, have a look at it and make sure that you understand the terms of the employer and what the requirements are if you ever need to call up that guarantee. And we always advise people to have a record kept where everybody will know that it's red flagged 1 month in advance of expiry and things of that nature. If it's expired, it's expired. You have no security from that guarantee. So again, just be careful in the managing of your contracts.
Thank you, Clive, for both your time today and your insight that you've provided on performance guarantees. As Clive mentioned at the beginning of the episode, we are running a mini-series on guarantees in construction contracts. So please join us in our next episodes where we will be looking at retention guarantees and the ways in which our courts have dealt with enforcing the different types of guarantees. But once again, thank you, Clive, for your time.
Thanks, Eva. I look forward to the next podcast.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.